Welcome to KTZR, Cinematic Cats and Jammer Radio. Our website is the Cinematic Cats and Jammer, that is cinecats.com, that is C-I-N-E, like cine, and cats with a K-A-T-Z.com. My name is Vivek, although I'm known as V, but my friends here with me are two of the writers and one of which is the main founder and editor, Nick Powell, and the other is Colin Flanagan, another writer and editor. For Cinecats, welcome, gentlemen.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So normally Nick hosts these podcasts, but this one, I guess I sort of put the outline together, so I guess that makes me the unofficial head honcho. The topic for this discussion is going to be about Marvel. Because our last podcast, we did one about DC, and and Warner Brothers mainly, when it comes to the films, what we like about them, a lot of which ones we don't like about them, what we consider for the future, ideas we have, stuff like that. And we're going to do something similar here, although I guess it's going to be less about ideas and more of a discussion of projections, where we see it going. We're going to talk about what we like so far, what we think the secret to the franchise, success has been. And also at the very end, I have a special little announcement to make about a little individual project that I've been working on in my own spare time on the weekends that has kept me up many nights.
Oh, you're building an Iron Man suit, aren't you?
it's close. It's close, but we'll talk about that later. Yeah. One thing that, for those who follow the website, we had a couple of different reviews that came out from us about Iron Man 3, which came out earlier this summer, and it's going to be available on DVD, I think, next week.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
For those listening.
I thought it came out today.
That's what I meant. September 24th. Whenever.
That would be today.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So in that case, you all can get it, rent it, buy it, whatever you want.
Or burn it.
If you haven't seen it. Or skip it or burn it. That's our DVD court is a little segment that we have where we examine every DVDs that come out. We do a lot of fun stuff on that website. You really guys should really check out. Anyway, Nick and I have fairly different opinions about Iron Man 3. My review that I wrote was very, very positive. I gave the movie a 9.2 out of 10, and I stand by that. Nick gave it high fives. By that I mean, like in the high,
something.
Yeah, something like that. It was not a very generous score. Granted, I've seen him do worse, but I wanted to start the debate off by talking about the movie with the benefit of hindsight and contemplation. And I figured, and I don't know what Colin's position on the film is, so maybe he could moderate it and we could talk for about maybe 5 to 10 minutes at the most.
Got a weird Mexican standoff here because Nick hates the thing. V, you like it, and I'm right in the middle of both of you. I think it's a fun film. I think it's flawed beyond belief. But walking out of it, the first thing that came to my mind was that it was a Shane Black movie through and through. And I like it for that. I wouldn't say I love it. I think Kiss Kiss Bang Bang's a better film. But I think it is definitely it's not the weakest Marvel movie, but I think it's the second weakest from Iron Man 2. So I'm definitely in the middle of both of you guys. I don't hate it. I really don't. And the twist in the middle, I think, is fun. And
guys, we're going to spoil this movie.
Okay, it's polarizing, but I do think that the Ben Kingsley twist is, I think it's fun. I had a problem with it when I was watching the film, and then letting it sink in, I thought it was a nice, it was a different take, and it wasn't a cliched summer blockbuster that we thought it was going to be, and they tried to do something different, and I give a point for that.
Yeah, one of the things I say, that one of the reasons I love that movie so much is because one of the big twists is actually something I really, really like about it. I thought not only is it a complete surprise, to me it came out of nowhere. I mean, I knew that there was going to be a twist going into the movie. I had heard chatter about some kind of crazy non-comic canon twist that was going to happen. I did not know it was going to be that.
I
thought it was amazingly fun. Ben Kingsley's acting was just absolutely hilarious. Trevor Slattery turns out to be a great character. And so I love what they did with that. To me, also, it was a twist that made perfect sense within the confines of not just the movie, but the general Iron Man mythos as the films had set out. Because it's all about the war on terror. But it's also about manipulation, scheming, and that is something that's very Iron Man.
Yes.
Nick, your thoughts?
Well,
come on, Nick.
Well,
cut deep.
Well. Okay. Believe it or not, the Ben Kingsley twist was the moment I almost walked out of the theater. It was very disappointing up until that, and then when that happened, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? You know, I understand it's different or whatever for other superhero movies and stuff like that, but when you're a billion-dollar movie, you do not make a move like that. That is just, pathetic. And then, you know...
Why not?
Well, because it's just Ben Kingsley, first of all, obviously the name of who he is and everything, he was built up as being this great villain and everything like that. And I'm fine that it changes with that. The only thing is, the villain that replaces him, in a sense, or literally is him from behind the scenes, is nowhere near as good a quality as the Kingsley villain we thought we had. And I think if you do something like that, the background guy needs to be a lot more interesting and a lot more exciting than what we had with Iron Man 3.
You'll never see it coming.
Exactly. But,
true, we
you know,
did not see it coming.
But it was almost like, hey, let's just do something different, and no one will see it coming, but we'll just do it because of that. I don't feel there was really any other reason behind it. Sure, the manipulation...
Are you arguing that it's a twist? Are you arguing that it's a twist that exists just to be a twist?
Almost. It's just kind of like, oh, well, Ben Kingsley's budget ran out. He's not in the movie anymore. He had an injury, so he can't do a final fight scene. Oh, we'll just write him out. Guy Pierce, we like you. Here's a lot more scenes. Here's more lines. I don't know. It completely rubbed me the wrong way. And
it felt a little sloppy, yeah. And not entirely, but I definitely... It rubbed me the wrong way at first.
And then how it happens, too, is just so, so idiotic. Like, what is with Ben Kingsley lately? I should have assumed that going into the movie, thinking, oh, Ben Kingsley, you know, lately he's had a terrible, terrible career with, you know, movies where every character he plays is a lot like the character in Iron Man 3. So it's just like, okay, you know, I thought he was going to turn around and be, you know, the villain of the summer, and he turns out to be this joke, drunk weirdo that, you know, loves ladies to an extent where he's like some shitty Adam Sandler comedy villain or something like that. And it was just, ugh. He's now just like Adam Sandler, in my opinion, which sucks for someone like Ben Kingsley, but now that he's around in something new or whatever, I'm like, okay, this is going to be either good or probably really bad, just because of his existence in the film. And Iron Man 3 really solidified my thought with that, and I just, ugh.
I see. Well, I do get the marketing really skewed a different way, and, when it comes to the Mandarin in general, he is basically the Iron Man villain, although he's sort of the Iron Man villain by default, just because he's out in an Iron Man comic, and Iron Man is the only one who just goes up against. I feel like everyone else in Marvel just doesn't care about the Mandarin, except for Iron Man, for some reason. That just seems to be the way their dynamic. Yeah, that just seems to be the way their dynamic plays out. But what I liked was, I think, and I do get. I mean, when I first saw the Mandarin in theaters, I was thinking, okay, wow. Iron Man's gonna be, his ultimate bad guy is actually gonna be, like, he has the 10 rings, maybe he's actually gonna be shooting lasers and being all alien like the Avengers, maybe it's gonna be like a giant, some kind of giant, you know, Matrix fight or something. Maybe it'll be fun. But the thing is, I think if it did do that, if it did take that, let's just say it's the easy route, and it did that, I feel like it would be a little cluttered for the film, because the film was already playing with a very heavy idea, which was Extremis, which was the genetics, you know, mutation, advancements, and upgrading humans, so to speak, and the side effects that would be creating bombs without actual bombs, and how that was going to affect the war on terror. And there was already a fairly complicated, although I would not say it's confusing, just complicated, setup of a general scenario to throw a now weak in Tony Stark right in the middle of. And I think it would have, if you had to have, if the Mandarin turned out to be just the main villain, you would have had to have wrapped up the Extremis thing really quickly and then separated that, thrown that under the bus in order to go in a completely different direction of the fifth act for the Mandarin fight. And I think that would have weakened the film.
I don't think so exactly like that, because they could have just given Ben Kingsley the powers, and like he could have done what Guy Pearce did, you know, to that extent. I don't like that Guy Pearce was the surrogate for the villain, because he was just there.
I suppose he could have, although if you gave the Mandarin the Extremis powers, that would have been even weirder. And I think people would have seen it as not being very creative, because in the end you're just giving the main villain who we think is someone who's supposed to have a different set of powers, and we were expecting to see not just the same powers that we've been seeing over the movie. It's almost better to go in an even more radical direction and say, oh, surprise, he doesn't actually exist, he's just a play, and it is actually just focusing on this for now. Now, Guy Pearce, I actually think, is the weak link of the film, aside, you know, for the most part. I think he's not bad, but he's not, when he calls himself the Mandarin at the end of the film, I get what they were trying to do with that, but it did come off a little too strong to me. That would be one problem I had with it. But I did think the twist was good for the reason of only just, it made the movie more interesting to me. And I guess that maybe it legitimized Extremis.
Okay, well,
yeah.
I like now, that Extremis idea. And I just really hated how they, like, if they said, oh, Ben Kingsley, you know, what I think would have been better is if, like, Tony Stark comes across Ben Kingsley and Trevor, and he realizes that he's not the villain, and then Guy Pearce shows up and kills Ben Kingsley right away. We didn't need that stupidity of him being this actor and all that bullshit. I think, you know, Guy Pearce literally showing up and killing him and taking over like a brute force kind of a villain, which would be like, screw you, I don't need you anymore, bam, you're dead, instead of that extra jokes and shit that was just kind of really unnecessary. Because if you think about it too, Guy Pearce, I agree, as much as I love him, I wouldn't say he's the weakest part of the film, because I obviously think there's a lot of weak things about the film, but I just don't think he was that bad of a guy, you know, especially with what you pointed out, too, that he has the same powers as everyone else. He's a little stronger or whatnot, but, you know...
He breathes fire, and then he forgets that he can do that. That's another problem in the film.
and for going with that powers, too, I would have totally preferred, because my favorite part of the film was James Badge Dale, who played Savin, one of the little henchmen. He was more badass than Guy Pearce, and I wish he stuck around more and was like, hey, I'm the actual villain or whatever. It just, I don't know. And then Rebecca Hall's, why she's included, I don't know.
She is completely wasted.
Movie Bob made a line in his review and said that she falls just a few lines short of being anything more than a plot device, and I think that pretty much sums it up.
Well, and Happy's existence, too, was just for comic relief, and that was pathetic. Like, he's the one person that survives an explosion. Whoa, how convenient.
Well, that's comic books. I mean, for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they brought Coulson back from the dead. So,
but that's so much, like, Coulson's on a whole nother level than Happy.
Is he? I'm not sure. They're very supporting, they're both very supporting characters. Yes, Happy was not in the Avengers, granted, but Coulson was
what brought everyone together. You know, sure, people would say, oh, yeah, it was Samuel Jackson, it was Nick Fury. No, it was Agent Coulson. In the end, his quote-unquote death is what brought the Avengers together. He is a much more powerful figure in the universe than
that's true.
Happy.
But Happy is more important for Iron Man individually. So if you're going to have an Iron Man movie, Happy is pretty much
the Happy
same
died,
as
and that Jarvis was the one go-to. And after
well,
all this,
yeah.
too... You know, Stark
that's
needs
true.
No one.
Jarvis
he's got Pepper Potts now, and she's more than
although in the film he doesn't really have her for most of it. That was the thing. But that's true. Now, what about the characterization of Tony Stark? That's another thing that I think you had issues with. I personally really liked it.
Sorry, what were you again?
The characterization of Tony Stark. Did you like the way? I mean, because structurally speaking. The middle act of the whole movie is essentially The Dark Knight Rises in a nutshell.
Yes.
So
I wasn't the biggest fan of Dark Knight Rises, so seeing it
right.
again through a character I really don't care as much about was kind of hard.
Right. Although you got to appreciate the irony of two billionaires having the same third story in some ways.
To an extent, yeah. I just like The Dark Knight Rises. This is called Iron Man 3. It should have just been called Tony Stark Origins or something, because it was not an Iron Man movie. It was like, even when he's raiding the compound or whatever, it's Tony Stark with a gun. Like, seriously? And I don't know. The whole
with
part,
Christmas ornaments.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that, because it means he's not just not confined to the suit. It means he's useful and has other purposes, not just for his money too. That's one thing that distinguishes Iron Man from Batman, because the thing is, with Bruce Wayne, he's one of the worst. Like, in DC, Bruce Wayne is one of the worst secret identities ever. Like, when he shows up, he goes everywhere, I guess, but he's there for like a minute. He's drunk, and then he goes away, and then suddenly Batman shows up, and and nobody seems to notice that Bruce Wayne's gone. Like, it's amazing how stupid the people of Gotham are, because Bruce Wayne just has no life to lead. He doesn't do anything. They call him a playboy because he walks around buying up hotels and shit with women under his arm occasionally, but no one ever really sees him. Tony Stark, people see him. He does different things. He's a mechanic and an engineer and a brilliant scientist first. And then he's Iron Man second.
And, so, and to quote the line that brought the whole series full circle was, "I am Iron Man." And when the film closed off with that, my take was that he is Iron Man. Tony Stark is Iron Man. I don't think Batman is Bruce Wayne. I think that they're separate. I think that they're separate. The point was that Tony Stark is Iron Man, and the whole film was him trying to survive without the suit, which helped him become essentially the hero.
Yeah, which is why I thought what they did in Iron Man 3, even though they had the same structural kind of story arc as Batman in the third film, with Tony Stark, I think it worked a lot better than it did in Dark Knight Rises. I still love Dark Knight Rises, but not as much as Iron Man 3, and for different reasons, and never mind. But, I thought it was much more appropriate for Iron Man, so I was really glad that they did that. It also felt basic. It felt like the film wasn't going to try too hard to top the Avengers, because no non-crossover film is going to top the Avengers. In Marvel, at least. At least I think so.
Until Avengers 2?
Until Avengers 2.
Yeah, okay.
I said non-crossover.
Avengers 2. Okay, sorry, yeah.
The Guardians of the Galaxy might, though. I don't know what they're doing for that one yet, but we'll talk about that one later.
But one last thing I know has been a constant complaint about Iron Man 3 that I just have to bring up, is when the world is going to shit, and Mandarin, who's a worldwide terrorist, who comes out of his hiding and is blowing up shit, why is there only Iron Man? You know, this is a domestic situation. I believe there's a particular hero that has our country's damn name in his name.
True.
So, where's Captain America?
Well,
I understand, because he's up in Asgard. And, you know, the Hulk, he doesn't come out. Black Widow is useless. Hawkeye's even worse. But Captain frickin' America.
I have a feeling that in Captain America Winter Soldier, they're going to bring it around to he was busy during. Like, they're going to play it as the same time Iron Man 3 was going on, so was Captain America, the sequel. So I have a feeling that he's going to be busy with Black Widow, and that they're going to bring it to
Ed Falcon.
And that he couldn't do anything because he was busy with his own things. I could be wrong, but that's what I think is going
to
happen.
Well, they don't even have to. I don't even think they have to do that, because the thing is, if you think about it, Iron Man 3 people call it a corner of existence. People say that Iron Man 3 takes place in a relatively confined space, but it doesn't. He starts off in New York, that's where his house is. Once it gets bombed, he goes straight to Tennessee. And then from there, he goes to Florida. I mean, and all of this is happening in not a lot of time, and he's been off the grid the whole time, so S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't know where he is. And Captain America knows what he's doing through S.H.I.E.L.D.
That is a bad excuse. It is
okay, fine, okay, fine, okay, fine. S.H.I.E.L.D. knows where he is, S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't care, for some reason. But
S.H.I.E.L.D. never cared about Iron Man.
Yeah, that's true. They never thought
he was a self-loathing asshole.
Yeah, they never thought they needed to. But the thing is, so going all the way from New York to Tennessee to Florida, and in a short period of time, and then the one big battle on the oil rig just takes place there, and once that's over, they all just fly back. I don't think Captain America would have gotten there in time, even if he knew where he was going. Because he can't exactly fly. I mean, unless he had S.H.I.E.L.D. with him. Like, S.H.I.E.L.D. drives the bus that takes him wherever he's going. So that's why I think, you know, that's why I think, even though, yes, Captain America would probably have something to say about the political stuff that goes on in Iron Man 3, I think it's totally understandable that he's not there. And plus, I have a feeling that Winter Soldier is, a lot of it is going to be about just how Captain America is actually adjusting with being in the 21st century. Because in the Avengers, they're just like, all you see is him in a gym punching a bag, and then in a deleted scene, he goes to a coffee shop, and he still doesn't, like, he sees the hot waiter, and then Stan Lee goes, "Ask for her number, you moron," and he has no idea what that means. That's why I think that Captain America is still adjusting, and as long as he's still adjusting, I think he's not going to be, he's going to try and stay away from missions until they come to him.
Well, with that, though, too, like, why didn't S.H.I.E.L.D. as a whole take care of it?
Well
they don't, like, they don't like Tony Stark, so, like, hey, Stark, get out of our way. We'll handle this.
I know in Captain America Winter Soldier that they're going to be dealing with kind of, I don't want to say corrupt S.H.I.E.L.D., but, like, something's going on behind closed doors at S.H.I.E.L.D. that we don't know about, and because, you know, Robert Redford is playing the president of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I don't know. It's just...
He's awesome.
Yeah, but he's got to be the bad guy. I mean, it's kind of like a given.
How much do you know about the Winter Soldier?
No, like the film?
I know who
Bucky's the Winter Soldier. But I'm just, I've heard interviews that they're talking about S.H.I.E.L.D. So something goes on with S.H.I.E.L.D. that isn't what Captain America agrees with. So
I knew that too. There was footage at the Comic-Con that I still haven't seen that involves Cap in an elevator fight, and it's like a S.H.I.E.L.D. ambush.
Yeah, so something's going on with S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. And, you know, that could be related to how they didn't help in Iron Man 3 as well. I don't know.
Which makes perfect sense to me. I mean, in the Avengers, you had Captain America Iron Man was asking all the questions, but Captain America was actually really doing the heavy work when it came to investigating.
And also,
what S.H.I.E.L.D. was doing, and that's probably made him distrust S.H.I.E.L.D. from the very beginning.
Yeah, because they didn't even like the idea of assembling a team of superhero nimwits anyways.
Yeah, that's true. we can probably stop about Iron Man 3 for now, but that's just what we think. I hope you guys decide. Obviously, it's done well, and financially speaking and commercially, so we're going to get a lot more of Marvel, and that's good, because Marvel's done well, and at least one comic franchise ought to be making good movies in a longer run. I mean, I when it comes to continuity in general, Harry Potter really sort of, it feels like that's really the jumping point when it comes to an actual series with the same actors that's getting bigger and bigger and more awesome as it progresses. And I think without that, we probably wouldn't have had the Marvel films. But thank God we do, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Aside from Iron Man 3, obviously most of Marvel has been at least pretty good. I had problems with the Captain America film. I think it got the character perfectly right, but Hugo Weaving's villain was so distant. He was so not there. He did not feel threatening or menacing. Yeah, he yelled a lot, but that's kind of it. He didn't really feel like the Red Skull that really felt like America's biggest menace, and I would have liked to see more of that. The guy who played Zolar, he was great, but Hugo Weaving's character.
Toby Jones.
Yeah, but Hugo Weaving's Red Skull, not so much. And also Peggy Carter, her actor was great. Haley Atwell.
She was very well endowed. I mean,
she was good. But she's a little too much in the beginning. I thought that whole thing with her, like, flipping the soldier over at boot camp was a little too, girl power, even during World War II.
I just thought she was a shallow kind of bitch. She's like, "Oh, Rogers, you're so cute," and then he gets muscular and he's like, "Oh my god, I want you." That's not cool.
Yeah. Although, I mean, it could have been worse. She could have literally just snubbed him and been like, "No, I'm too pretty for you," and then suddenly he gets, I mean, it could have been worse.
That's true.
On that. But now, so Thor: The Dark World comes out on November 8th. That's the next one in line for Phase 2. And for those of you who don't know, Phase 2 consists of Iron Man 3's The Beginning, then Thor the Dark World, then Captain Winter Soldier, then Guardians of the Galaxy, and then it ends with Avengers Age of Ultron, and then that's when Phase 3 begins. So we've had one, and now Thor the Dark World is number 2, and it comes out in November. Guys, are you looking forward to it? What are your thoughts on it?
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, Mighty Thor.
I don't know. I'm so not waiting to run to theaters to see it. Specifically, my biggest issue with the first film, and my looks to be biggest issue with the second film, given the trailers, is the existence of Natalie Portman. She has no place. As far as I'm concerned, Thor does not need a mortal love. If anything, he needs to hook up with Sif, because Jamie Alexander is attractive, and then they need to have little god babies. I just think he's like, oh, okay, I'm going to blink and she's going to age and then she dies. Yay, let's focus on that relationship because it means so much. No, and from the trailers too, it looks like everything surrounds her where she's like kidnapped or something and then Thor's like, no, you do not take my woman from me. And then he goes, gets all angry and stuff. No, I'm not excited for that or excited for the pretty obvious destruction porn that should have been in a summer movie and not a Thanksgiving movie. So,
I'm not sure for
Elba and for Hiddleston.
Right. Well, I'm not sure that destruction porn is specifically relegated just to summer movies. I mean, let's face it, Avatar came out in like November, and that movie has a lot of destruction.
Mm-hmm.
I do take your point. Then the first Thor did come out in the summer, so I suppose that's true. Although that one, unfortunately, had the problem of being a little underwhelming as well, because you had all the crazy destruction in the beginning, and then you just had the one destroyer in the town. And, yeah, it looked like he was doing damage, but he didn't look like he was doing that much damage. And it, more importantly, it didn't even look like Thor was doing that much damage. And the way Nick Fury described it in The Avengers, he goes, it was a grudge match that leveled an entire town. It wasn't that bad.
That's true.
Yeah.
But, so that's true, yeah. The first Thor movie is definitely not, it's not, it's far from perfect. It's the most kid-friendly of them all, to its credit. And when it comes to being a basic story of, a basic, like, coming-of-age superhero story, you could do a whole lot worse, I thought. But Colin and I were actually talking about this on Twitter earlier today. I think I like Natalie Portman in the movie. Colin says, you said she's adorable.
Let me rephrase that.
Okay.
I don't think she's adorable. I think the fact that she's in love with Thor is that she idolizes this hubby, shirtless, blonde god. I think that is...
She's another shallow bitch. Marvel's full of them, apparently.
I think that she having a crush on Thor is kind of semi-adorable. That's my explanation. I have other problems with Thor other than that, though, other than Natalie Portman, and it's mostly to do with how little is shown of Asgard, and how...
Asgard is awesome.
It was awesome, but we weren't shown enough...
Right.
Yeah, I don't think we were shown enough of that world, and I think that's going to be shown a lot more in Thor 2, and I've heard from Comic-Con that people went goo-goo gaga for what was shown with the visuals and the world, and I'm super excited for that. And my other problem with Thor was that I didn't believe the whole this god who's selfish and his father banishes him to Earth regains, you know, he
you don't believe he actually earned it?
Yeah, he doesn't earn it in 2 days, in a weekend, essentially.
That is true.
And I have a big problem with that. And that's happened before with other films, but I just... The whole fact that, you know, they realize in 2 days, I don't jive with all that well.
Yeah, there isn't exactly one signature point that you can... I mean, aside, the closest thing there is to the point where Thor, like, has an emotional breakdown would be the one where he's like, okay, I found the hammer. Now all I gotta do is pick it up.
Okay, yeah, but he has... Yeah, but he has an emotional breakdown because he can't get his hammer. He doesn't have an emotional breakdown because he feels bad for what for killing all those frost giants.
Right. No, that's true. That is true. He has a very rapid change of heart, and it's not that much indication as to why. The closest I could theorize would be maybe he thought Natalie Portman's character was so cute that it taught him the value of life, and he decided to extend that courtesy to non-humans as well. But yeah,
he's
no, that's
Tarzan,
true.
And she's Jane. Mind
pretty
blown.
Much. Pretty well,
the
that,
name's
that's
even
true.
Jane.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, my
holy
friend, a friend of mine.
You'll
a friend of mine made the same point.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. A friend of mine made the same point that it's true. It's not all that clear as to why he has such a change of heart, and it doesn't seem to fit for a superhero. Although, what I would say to that is, I think it was a very clever way of making Thor relatable. I mean, because you have this big. When we were talking on Twitter, one thing I said was. It is, to me, that, for one thing, it was nice to see Natalie Portman actually have a crush on someone. I mean, she's like, everybody, you know, if you ask anybody, you give them a list of, like, top three female celebrities that you have a super crush on, Natalie Portman is in that top three
was
list for a lot
crush,
of
was it a crush, though, or was it more of like, damn, I want him to bang my brains out, you know?
I would call that a crush.
But crush makes it sound innocent. Like,
I think it was pretty innocent. I don't know, I just thought it was pretty innocent.
You know, those scientists have kinky minds and stuff, you know?
Yeah, they have kinky minds, but part of the reason they have kinky minds is because they're innocent.
I don't know.
I mean, that's why. I don't think she's gotten out a lot. That's probably why she fantasizes about a lot of things, because she's been a scientist and she's been an astronomer this whole time.
I think that my biggest complaint is with the casting of her. You know, she's too big of a name for someone like that. They should have cast a no-name. They should have made someone's career like they made Chris Hemsworth's. And, you know, like, she's an Oscar-winning actress. Literally, this was, like, right after her win. And it's just, like, really? You go from that to such, like, drivel?
I was going to say, so was No Strings Attached, which was right after her Oscar win. But we won't bring that up.
Well, I remember hearing at the roast of James Franco that, as Jonah Hill says, that George Clooney's philosophy is, when it comes to making movies, one for them and one for me. Maybe Natalie Portman has a similar attitude to that. Like, you know, one for them, meaning that's Thor, and then one for me would be like Black
Panther. I don't know.
You're from the Star Wars films.
I don't know. Has she ever, like, acted in anything that was great after Black Swan, though? Has she ever, in the past 2 years?
No, she probably never will.
She was in that really hilariously stupid comedy movie with Danny McBride, and I forget the name of it.
Your Highness.
Yeah, that's the only other Natalie Portman movie I remember.
Maybe she'll be the female Nick Cage, where she gets the Oscar and then just doesn't give a shit.
Maybe.
But that's a completely different level. I don't know. It's
no, I know.
That's not the same as Nick Cage.
No, I'm
angry that they didn't keep it more in Asgard and let Thor and Sif, you know, because in the comics, from what I believe, they do hook up on occasion.
Oh, they do. Well, that's true. I mean, also in the comics, Iron Man and Black Widow. They hook up a lot.
It's like just with that instance too. Like, they could have made Jamie Alexander, who I think is great, and I think if Marvel has secured her enough, because like we talked about before, I think she would have made a great Wonder Woman. But you know, it's all of the Heroes 3, they're not utilized enough at all, and it's really, you know, I wish the focus with Sif and Thor would have put more focus on the Heroes 3, and that would have been a lot more interesting, I thought, especially keeping it in Asgard.
I agree.
And I think that's going to happen with the second one, though, too.
I think
Jill is still everywhere, it seems.
Yeah, she is everywhere, but I think that's... I think she's going... And I hate to say it, but if they have to use her as a plot point in order to get us there, I have a feeling that they're going to kill her in this movie.
Right, and I hope
I have the same feeling.
Right in the beginning.
I don't know. I don't think it'll happen right in the beginning. I think it'll happen maybe around the middle. But if that's what it takes to have the Warriors 3 actually do something a lot more fun, because the Warriors 3, yeah, they're cool, but we see them in two fights, and in the second one they did very, very little. And so no, I agree. I would have liked to see more of them. But then again, you can't really have for your first movie about Thor, trying to bring that universe into the rest of Marvel, makes us believe it. I feel like that's still a bigger challenge, and maybe we're not giving it enough credit. Because if you just had a movie just about Thor and his adventures with the Warrior Three, I'm not sure it would have had the same. I'm not sure it would have resonated like a Marvel movie.
That would be so cool, though.
Well, but the thing is, though, maybe that's. And again, this is very, very defensive. This what I'm saying right now about Thor 1 would absolutely not fly with very many other superhero movies. And it has, and I'll either be vindicated or proven hilariously wrong when Thor 2 comes out, because we're basically holding out for Thor 2 in order to prove that, okay, yeah, Thor 1 being a little stagnant, a little flat, but ultimately just kind of serving a greater purpose was a good idea. That, I think it is, but if Thor 2 turns out to be great, and it turns out to have these different things and be great for those reasons, then I think Thor 1 will be vindicated. And Thor 2 will be remembered as one of the stronger Marvel films.
That makes sense. And I do think, I know it was just due to scheduling, but, you know, the fact that they recast, I can't remember his name, the one of the Heroes 3 with Zachary Levi from Chuck. I don't know if that's also a sign or an indication, because if you think about it, if there's anyone that deserves like their own side story in the Marvel Universe that exists already, I would give it to them just to explore Asgard even more, just because of how fun they could be. And, you know, they could be kind of like a Indiana Jones meets like King Arthur kind of style kind of thing. And, you know, why that's not tapped into, I don't know. And I hope that really is tapped into a lot more with the Dark World. And I do agree, and I do hope that it is Jane dying. I just don't see Natalie Portman hanging around long enough to be part of a big franchise. I think she's bored, and her performance, especially in the first one, was a sign of that. But that's a whole other story.
That's fair. That is fair. A lot of people took issue with Natalie Portman just because she does seem out of place in that film. I mean, Anthony Hopkins is also someone who might seem out of place, but he's Odin.
Yeah,
and he's an awesome Odin.
He is.
Oh, I didn't find him out of place at all.
No, I said he would. I said he would. Being who he is, he might seem from the outset that he's out of place.
Yeah,
but in the film, he's
not. Yeah, yeah.
But he's kind of like that. Like, again, bringing it back to, you know, they should have cast a lesser known or an unknown. You know, he's kind of like the veteran actor that brings it all together. You know, with that in mind, then you don't need the Natalie Portman like character or the actress, I should say. So, yeah.
That's true. I agree, though. I do think that Thor and Sif ultimately make a better combination, and I think it'll get there. Because I think Marvel intends to keep Jamie Alexander for a while.
She's perfectly cast.
Maybe not because of Wonder Woman, but just because she's just really well cast, and Lady Sif is awesome. And I have a feeling her fandom is going to increase, at least a little bit.
Well, and with Marvel talking a lot, too, of, you know, trying to create or try to find that female hero, you know, if anything, to make Sif a strong supporting hero is something that they really need to do. And I think that they are aware of that enough that I think that she, if any of the Heroes 3 will be the more standout one in the sequel, especially, you know, if she can pick up Thor's pieces after Jane dies, if that does happen.
Well,
if it does happen, it won't happen that fast, but yeah.
Right.
You might be wrong, but don't Thor and Sif get married eventually in the comics?
Yeah.
They have a thousand kids together too, don't they?
Yeah, they bang a lot.
So this would be a nice setup for that, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were already given a little bit of a hint of it in the first Thor movie. I mean, because at the very end of it, even though Thor and he's like missing Jane and he's all, you know, weepy over the destruction of the bridge, then you have Sif come up right next to Thor's mother, and you can just see, like, Thor's mother, like, I'm still really hoping that you two get together.
Well, and I believe, too, that's mentioned a couple times where they, like, yeah, you had your chance kind of thing. From what I kind of remember, is, like, they were very flirty. Like, again, not enough to warrant anything, but, yeah, I think those signs will at least be something that they won't just, you know, have a dead end with, and that it will actually go somewhere with it.
I'm trying to remember what it was. I remember them having two lines spoken to each other. It was like, or three lines. It's like, and Lady Sif, who proved that a woman could do what we could do? And she's like, I did. And Thor's like, yeah, but I encouraged you. But that's, I I thought that was all he had said.
But Heroes 3 on their own, too. Like, Ray Stevenson's character was teasing her a lot, too.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, I thought you meant between her and Thor specifically, but yeah, that's true.
But yeah, it was definitely clear that it wasn't really one-sided with Sif's feelings. But, you know, that will come around. But yeah.
So I guess it's also a good place to transition. We were talking earlier a little bit during the Iron Man 3 debate about Captain America and what he may be doing at the same time that Iron Man is having his fun.
If you hurt my friends, then you hurt my pride. I gotta be a man, I can't let it slide. I am a real American, fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American, fight for what's right, fight for your life.
We've seen some footage of Captain America and S.H.I.E.L.D., that they're going to have some kind of either falling out or some kind of back and forth, some cat and mouse game that they're going to be playing. I don't know. I haven't been doing my homework when it comes to Winter Soldier. I read the book, but are they bringing in Sharon Carter? Do you guys know?
I don't know.
Okay. Interesting.
My guess is, I don't think so because I've just read last week that Captain America will be hooking up with Paul.
Okay.
Wait, say that again.
I read Black Widow last week. An article that said that they were hinting at it, or they were going to, or something like that. But
yeah,
that doesn't mean that.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that Sharon Carter can't be in it. But
she is actually in it. I just looked it up on Wikipedia. She's put by Emily Van Camp as Sharon Carter / Agent 13. Now, for those of you who don't know, Sharon Carter is the great-grandniece of Peggy Carter. And in the comic, this is actually kind of hilarious. In the comics, Captain America and her have a relationship that, in the beginning of Volume 5, which is the one that has Winter Soldier, they're still working together, but they're exes. But it's just kind of hilarious that Captain America dated Peggy and Sharon Carter. And he doesn't feel the slightest bit weird about that.
I don't want that, though, because, like, my biggest complaint about Captain America, which, for the most part, I liked, is that, you know, obviously it's different because of how they had to set it and bring it to the modern time, but, like, I really like their relationship in the comics, and I really don't like that we're not going to have any time to focus on it, which I know just is how, you know, it has to happen. But, I mean, really, he's already going for her niece? That's just awkward.
That is awkward. If he's trying to adjust, the last thing he should be trying to do, I mean, is to be going after women, because if you're out of your time, you're just going to fail, even if you look as good as Chris Evans does. Because, I mean, he's like, the only reference he understood in The Avengers was The Wizard of Oz one. Yeah, he didn't get any others. He was like, you know, and it's true. The film played with that in a very clever way, and that made for a fun dynamic with heroes. But how he interacts with heroes is not exactly the same way he interacts with women. I do wonder how many flashbacks to World War II he's going to have, because one thing that happens all over the place in Captain America comics, it's as if every night when he goes to bed, he just dreams right back to World War II. So I'm wondering if they're going to do anything with that. I wonder if maybe the Red Skull's going to make some kind of cameo and show that there was more to him than what we saw in the first one, although I hope they don't do too much with that, because they've already got a lot of things to do in this film. You've got Robert Redford, you've got Bucky, you've got the Black Widow and the women, I'm assuming Maria Hill's going to be in the movie, I'm assuming Sam Jackson will be in it too, in fact I know he will. And then you also have Anthony Mackie being introduced as the Falcon, and the Falcon flies. So if that's going to be like an origin story for another supporting Avengers character, I would hope they don't do too much of flashbacks, but I would like to see one.
Go
on.
Go ahead, Nick.
I was going to say, I agree with you, V, that, you know, the casting that they had in Captain America with, like, Dumb Doug Dugan and everyone like that, I think those are two recognizable faces, and they were too small of roles that I think, you know, he's not credited for. He is credited for Marvel's one shot with Agent Carter, But, you know, just Neil McDonough, for instance, he's a great actor, and he fit the role really well. I don't know why they want to tap into that again. So I would like to see his buddies in flashbacks.
I do too. It would be nice to see them again, because if there's one thing that Iron Man 3 taught us in terms of what Marvel, I guess, is going to be trying to do, and I guess maybe what they have to do, and we didn't really cover this in Thor 2, but it's like these individual films, and this is the same way they work in the comics, they're not just sequels to the Avengers. They're not just three different sequels to the Avengers in different ways. They're also sequels to the films that came before. Iron Man 3 is a sequel to the Avengers and a sequel to Iron Man 2. Thor 2 is mostly a sequel to Thor 1. They're probably not going to have all that much about the Avengers in Thor 1. What we saw in the trailer about Natalie Portman slapping Loki, saying that was for New York, and Loki being locked up and saying, "Oh, you must be truly desperate to my help," that's probably the only callbacks they're going to have. Because it's going to be their own different story. And I think, and Captain America: The Winter Soldier, I hope they do that too. I've heard that from Kevin Feige that they're going to be following the comic very closely on that. That's good, because the comic is considered one of Cap's best stories, and it is pretty awesome. So, at least that.
Yeah. You know, I just hope it doesn't get bloated, because there is a lot of people in it, and I don't know how long the time's going to be on the film, but it's kind of like an opus with how many people are in it.
And piggybacking on what Nick said about it being bloated, Winter Soldier, it feels a lot like what Iron Man 2 did to me, because you've got this hero story who, this involvement with S.H.I.E.L.D., and then he has his buddy, which, you know, is going to be played by Anthony Mackie, the Falcon, and it just, I don't know, it feels like a lot like what Iron Man 2 was going to do. I don't know if it's going to succeed or not, but
I will more excited for it if Robert Redford is channeling his Mickey Rourke. That would be interesting. But yeah, no, I agree. It's kind of like Iron Man 2 meets Spider-Man 3, Spider-Man 3. But we'll see.
Yeah,
that's true. And next on the list, of course, is Guardians of the Galaxy. This one's brand new. This one has, first of all, I am honestly shocked that we're getting, that this is a movie that we're actually getting in modern time. What a time to be alive.
It's crazy. What? I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the one I'm most excited for out of Phase 2, with Avengers, Age of Ultron. Guardians of the Galaxy is the one I'm looking most forward to.
Yeah, agreed. Because it is something new. Granted, it's ridiculously ambitious. But it's something new. It's something a lot of Marvel people haven't heard of. They're introducing it within the scope of the cinematic universe, and comfortably after we get sequels to all the ones that we kind of all probably want sequels to. So it's a good time to get to. It's a good time to get into it, and I like that Comic-Con and everything has been following it very closely. For those of you who don't know about the Guardians of the Galaxy, they are essentially another Avengers of a sort, but off in the distance. They're in space in another system with their own set of problems and their own little war, and their story gets bigger, and their story comes to Earth eventually. In the comics, the Secret Invasion plot line is the first main really big thing that ties all Guardians of the Galaxy and the Avengers together. Although there is some, in the original Guardians of the Galaxy story, Drax the Destroyer has a plotline on Earth, I know that, but it's a brief thing. So you have heroes and new characters that we've never heard of and we've never seen in a movie before, ever, in comics that are relatively new. These comics, I think, started in, I want to say, 2006.
Yeah, sorry, just real quick, too. You mentioned, too, that we've never seen him in a movie. I don't think we've ever even seen him in an animated form either, have we?
Yeah, we haven't. I don't think we have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for those of you who are, you guys should definitely check out some of the comics. There's the main story that brings in, that enters them is called Annihilation. It's a major crossover, and it's also an introduction of all these guys. You have Chris Pratt, who's going to be, his name is Peter Quill, but his hero name is Star-Lord. You have Zoe Saldana, who's going to be playing Gamora. And by the way, if you guys remember, at the end of The Avengers, when you see in the mid-credits scene, when you see Thanos, Thanos' origin stories exist with Guardians of the Galaxy. So at the very beginning, that's the connection. And Zoe Saldana's Gamora is Thanos' adopted daughter. You have Dave Bautista as Dracula. You have Lee Pace as Ronan the Accuser. Ronan is probably going to be the villain of this film. Those of you who watch The Walking Dead, Michael Rooker, the guy who plays Merle, will be Yondu. For those of you who've seen Blood Diamond, Digimon Hounsou is going to be Korra. And then also Benicio del Toro is going to be the Collector, who's another villain. John C. Reilly's in the movie, and then Bradley Cooper is Rocket Raccoon.
And Vin Diesel. Yeah, it's a crazy, crazy cast. And it's worth mentioning, too, that Benicio del Toro's Collector, because I was looking it up, and he is credited as being in the Thor of the Dark World. So that will be another bridge for the character. Because I think, while Lee Pace will be the villain in this film, along with, isn't Glenn Close the villain in it, too? No, Karen Gillian.
Yeah.
Glenn Close is in the film, though. I'm Karen Gillian as Nebula. I forgot about her.
Yeah, I think the Collector will be kind of in the background, along with Thanos as being the big baddie for Phase 3.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, because the thing about Thanos is, and I think a lot of people probably found out who Thanos was. If they didn't recognize him in the Avengers, they probably asked their biggest friend among them, and they would have told him that it was Thanos. And Thanos is a big thing, at least in the beginning. It's true, he's all about power, but he's also about love in his own twisted way. In Marvel, Death is a woman, I guess. And so in the Avengers film, when that Chitauri alien says to challenge them is to court Death, that's not just a poetic way of saying challenge them is to basically get your ass kicked. It is literally to the woman Death. And Thanos is in love. And woman, I think the woman Death is like a child, too. It's actually kind of hilarious.
He's interesting. I just still think of him as a ripoff of Darkseid, but that's a different story.
They are similar. They look alike, for one thing.
Yeah.
And Dark did come first.
Yep.
It's true, they are. But Thanos does have enough of an interesting personality, and a Darkseid is... Darkseid is more of a, I want to destroy everything and everyone everywhere because why the hell not? I've always thought of Darkseid as that kind of guy. He's never really had, he plans stuff, but that's it. He doesn't plan his plan. Whereas I think Thanos does a bit more of that. So hence he makes for a better character. At least in theory, I hope he does. So Guardians of the Galaxy should be very interesting. When we see a trailer, I'm sure all of us will be going crazy.
Have either of you seen the Comic-Con footage?
I have not.
It's so awesome.
It looks awesome.
All right. I'm not finding it. It's nowhere on the internet anymore. But
yeah, I know.
It was.
I heard it got leaked. I didn't see it.
It was like Star Wars meets Usual Suspects.
Yeah, and I think we should also mention that James Gunn is directing.
I was about to say that. Yeah.
Very true.
And I hate Super, but I love Slither.
Right.
And he is. I think he is the perfect guy to put this together. And even Joss Whedon agrees and thinks that he'd be perfect. And
if there was one,
I think James Gunn has the weird kind of directing personality to bring this kind of film.
And I hope that it is weird. We talked about Thor, we talked about Iron Man and Captain America. And as much as I like the characters, I am, frankly, kind of tired of them. So, a fresh take on it all is really going to be interesting. And the casting is just perfect. Chris Pratt is so awesome on Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
He's on. And him finally getting a role like this is just, just to bring it back to an earlier episode of KTZR when I talked to Jim O'Hare of Parks and Rec, he talked about, hearing the news that Chris Pratt was finally cast in, a movie that was definitely going to make him a household name and how proud he was and everything. And in a weird way, I'm kind of proud of him too because, he's proven over and over that he has talent, And even, in Moneyball, it was a smaller role, he still showed that he had some dramatic flair as well. So seeing him, beef up for this action movie, leading the movie nonetheless, is just, that's the most exciting aspect of the film for me.
Oh, I agree. Chris Pratt's awesome. Wasn't he? He's also in Dear Dark 30, and he was cool in that one. He's in the third act. He's one of the Navy SEALs, but he was awesome.
He's slowly becoming, I kind of compare him, he's kind of like the funnier Joel Edgerton. like they have in Zero Dark Thirty, they're in it together, but they kind of have a very similar presence where it's kind of like this built-in like charm, charisma about them that you're just like, why aren't you in everything? And he's finally getting that, and I'm just can't wait.
Yeah, but the good thing is, aside from Slither, the other interesting thing he made was, and this is something that he himself was very much like, I think it's something he's always wanted to do because of his sense of humor. He made a thing called James Gunn's PG Porn.
Yeah.
I've seen some of it. It's hilarious. Like, it's really, really funny. And yet, at the very least, just look it up on Wikipedia, even look at the episode names, they're really, really funny. And so I haven't seen all of it. I want to, but it'll be like a season. It'll be a special fun thing to do. The music of the film, by the way, is going to be composed by Tyler Bates. He composed 300. He's composed a lot of Zack Snyder films like 300, Sucker Punch, Watchmen. He's done. He also did Dawn of the Dead. He did Day of the Earth Stood Still. He's good.
So we're gonna have a badass like. Electric guitar, kind of like Brahm, kind of like Hans Zimmer, awesome, badass feel to it. So yeah, I'm excited for that. Love Tyler Bates.
I agree. Yeah. So Guardians of the Galaxy is definitely the one that I'm most looking forward to, and it is something new. I mean,
it's also, sorry.
The thing that I was going so crazy about this year when it came to Pacific Rim was just. It was a nerdy thing that was new. It was new material. Yeah, fine. It was ripped off and borrowed from like a zillion different anime. But it was still ultimately new material. The fact that it ended up being a really good movie just made it even better.
Yeah.
So I'm really rooting for Guardians of the Galaxy. I really hope that it's going to be good, and I hope to be giving it a really positive review.
And one thing that, from what I've gathered, just from the little I've read about Guardians of the Galaxy, though, is that you know, a lot of people are looking to 2015 for Star Wars Episode 7, but we're probably going to have our own version of a Han Solo with Chris Pratt's Star-Lord, so that's going to be exciting as, like, the... Or even more relevant, you know, Malcolm from Firefly and Serenity, which, if I'm not mistaken, you know, Gunn's kind of getting a surrogate in Chris Pratt of Nathan Fillion, and I love that idea just because I think they're pretty... relatively interchangeable on their own, but still, you know, bringing their own stuff. But I'm glad to see Chris Pratt again. Just if he comes out and is like the new cult icon, and because I can just imagine how much fun he's going to have at Comic-Con. The guy's just going to go crazy, and I love that. So
and I really love him. He's generated a lot of goodwill just by being a lot of fun on Parks and Rec.
Right.
So by itself, that's just a really good thing.
Exactly.
And now, let's talk about Ultron.
I am Ultron 6, a cybernetic intelligence created by Dr. Henry Pym. My imperative is to bring peace and order to this world. I am about to fulfill that imperative. For the extinction of humanity begins now.
All right. You want to elaborate on that one, buddy?
I just don't. I hate the casting of James Spader, but you know, I
don't really?
Know. Yeah, I don't like him. I don't know why. People like love him, but I'm like, no, I don't know. He's funny to an extent, but I just don't see him as like a major. And like again, I don't know how they're gonna do Ultron. I originally thought it was gonna be Jarvis that turns bad, and if that is the case, it's still James Spader. That pisses me off because I love Paul Bettany. So, you know, I don't know.
Well, my guess is that, I don't know. I think that it's possible that Paul Bettany will be Jarvis, who turns back, and it sounds weird and dumb, but will have a voice change to James Spader.
That's what pisses me off.
That actually really sounds bad. So, honestly, the thing is, when I first heard that they were going to do Ultron, I think they were going to cast Ultron. As weird as that sounded, I didn't think they needed to. Casting James Spader's cool. The fact that I like him, the fact that he's in the Marvel project, that's interesting. And it is, I mean, he was great in Lincoln. He was great. He's great on Boston Legal. So he's a lot of fun. He's a great actor. And I hope I'm probably going to check out Blacklist when I think it may be out already. I actually don't know. But, yeah, it came out yesterday. Apparently I missed it. But, So I'm going to be checking him out, but it is weird that of all the things they decided to cast him in, that they chose Ultron. Now, granted, he's 53.
Right.
So I'm not sure. So who else are you going to cast him as? I don't know.
But I just, like, if it's specifically for a voice, I kind of get it, but I still just, like, if it is Jarvis, that's going to be the really big breaking point for me. Because, you know, they hired Paul Bettany for a reason. It wasn't just his voice, you know. I figure they're going to use him again later. And that idea of it happening with Jarvis is just like, really? I mean...
Well, maybe this is an indication that it won't be Jarvis.
Right. Which I'd be fine with, but if it is, that's just really going to piss me off.
Yeah. So, props to Nick for saying. Now, this is... When it turned out that it was Age of Ultron, when that in and of itself was revealed, I was incredibly surprised, because I had been under the impression that Marvel was going to be doing something completely different. I had heard on the Wire, and this Wire is something that Nick absolutely hates, so I'm going to bring it up anyway. This website called Latino Review. I'm on their email list, and so every now and then these guys go digging and they find something, or at least they think they found something. I'm never entirely sure because they've never really backed it up. If what they say is true about the Doctor Strange script, I'm pretty excited. but I don't know. This was months ago. This was back in, I want to say, April. But they came out with. They came out with this, that it was going to be, but at the end, and this could still theoretically happen for the record, but at the end of Avengers 2, Iron Man and his group were going to banish the Hulk. Now in the comics, this is a very famous moment in comic history, because it leads to one of the best Hulk stories ever, and actually no, the best Hulk story ever, called Planet Hulk. Basically, the story is the Illuminati, which in Marvel is a secret organization of Iron Man, Reed Richards, Namor, Professor X, Black Bolt, and a couple of other guys, who basically they form together to not necessarily to fight as a separate Avengers team, but to share information, and they do so because of the fact that aliens exist and the Earth has been invaded a couple times by the Skrulls and stuff like that, and so their first action as a group collectively is to banish the Hulk. They trick the Hulk into space, saying, "Hey, we need you to go into space and help us out on this project thing." They trap him in a pod and they just launch the pod just away. So Hulk is obviously pretty pissed off, but then he lands on a planet. He gets integrated with civilization. In the comics, Hulk talks in general. Like, he actually can carry out a conversation. So I thought they were actually going to be making a Planet Hulk movie, and for Avengers 3, it would be bringing Hulk back for World War Hulk, which is the follow-up, and that's when Hulk returns to Earth for revenge, and he basically fights everyone. it turns out we were wrong. But by itself, that was a surprise, and that's fine. Apparently, Joss Whedon said that Thanos was never supposed to be the villain of the Avengers 2, in which case I have to wonder, did they leak Thanos just so they could be leaking the Guardians of the Galaxy movie?
Yeah, I think so.
I guess so, which is cool. Now, Ultron is a villain. Ultron is awesome, in my opinion, at least. However, the way he's drawn, he's taken on several different forms. There's a female version of him, like where he like basically dons like a female robotic body, kind of like not too different from the Terminatrix in Terminator 3. I know that's a really bad movie to be bringing up, but maybe that's why they're bringing in Spader. Maybe they just think that maybe Spader won't actually be doing all that much like heavy hitting, as much as he'll just be like trying to be Arnold Schwarzenegger's robot and looking menacing. And James Spader can do that.
Yeah,
I think now
I'm just picturing him in a dress.
Me too. I was thinking of him in drag, totally.
Yeah, and that's not the best way to transition.
No, but I don't know, and I because you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Ultron's origin really related to Ant-Man as well?
Yes, in the original Ultron is created by. But in Avengers, that's not going to be the case. Which is, I think that was why we were all speculating that maybe it's going to be Jarvis, because Hank Pym, who's also Ant-Man, well, Hank Pym is like a million different guys. He's Ant-Man, he's Yellow Jacket, he gets to be Wasp at one point and all that stuff. But he is an engineer at first, and he created Ultron. You know, the usual, I create the robot to do my bidding and help us out, and oh, crap, now it's evil. but that's what that's all about. So, it's going to be a different origin story. But there are different versions. There are different iterations of Ultron that come up. There are, like, at least 12 different versions of them in the comic. And some of them have different origin stories. I don't know which one they're going to do, if they're even going to do one from the comic. But we'll see.
Well, one thing I remember reading about Joss Whedon is he said that Ultron's existence will have been related to something we've already been very familiar with, which really makes me believe it is going to be Jarvis. It really does work as a great, you know, the downfall of the Avengers may be Tony Stark's own creation, I think is very fitting to the relationship that they have all together. But again, the possibly miscasting of James Spader instead of using Paul Bettany is just the most frustrating part.
There is another idea. There is another possibility that I actually thought of somewhat recently and I was hoping to bring up. Joss Whedon says that, and do you remember in the Avengers how in the second act, before all the fighting starts, they were talking about Phase 2? What if S.H.I.E.L.D. makes it? What if S.H.I.E.L.D. uses the alien technology that they got from the Chitauri, and they make Ultron, and Ultron goes rogue by accident?
That could be interesting.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
I could see that as another possibility. And that would, the profile is something that we're familiar with, because we're familiar with Phase 2, and he said that after the event had already come out, and everybody had seen it, so...
You could even say that that would tie into Captain America 2, is that their final weapon is the creation of Ultron, and, like, it's created, but it doesn't become rogue until Avengers 2. And then that way,
maybe,
you wouldn't really need the origin story in Avengers 2, as much as it would be like, oh, you know. Like, they could have Ultron in Captain America Winter Soldier, and then post-credits, it's like, Nick Fury, something's wrong. Ultron is aware. Whatever. Fade to black.
Maybe. Or rather, the very post-credits of Captain America 2 could just reveal that what, I mean, like, maybe Captain America, maybe the movie, maybe some parts of the Winter Soldier that have to do with falling out of S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't actually revealed to us in the movie itself until the post-credits. Maybe the thing that S.H.I.E.L.D. has been working on that Captain America, you know, has been secretly knowing about but has been against was Ultron. Maybe that's just revealed in the post-credits. That sounds bad, but I don't, they could probably write that a different way.
Actually, I do like that idea. I like it even more, too, if it is somehow tied in with Captain America, because I think with the Avengers 2, there needs to be a shift of power from Tony Stark being the leader to Captain America being the leader.
Agreed.
I think
that would be an interesting way to do it.
I do recall that an interview that Joss Whedon said that to prepare for, you know, somebody or a certain amount of people in Avengers 2, like, you know, some of the main character, like superheroes. And this is just dawning on me now that possibly Jarvis is Ultron, and then somehow takes over Tony's suit, and it kills him in some way. And then I don't know; it's a little dark, but I mean, it's possible.
He did say that Avengers 2 was going to be more personal.
I guess,
what his wording was.
And I think to shift that power from Tony to Captain America, I mean, he would die. And also with this whole thing about Robert Downey Jr., you know. With the trilogy ending, and I don't know, it could be possible that, you know, we see the demise of Tony Stark, which also could fuel the Avengers to try to defeat Ultron.
In a similar way, you have another death in the team that galvanizes the rest of them into teaming up and taking out a bad guy.
Yeah,
if you think about it too, you know, if Thanos is eventually the bad guy in Phase 3, and the Guardians come into the picture, there's no way all 9 of those people can share the screen. So they have to clean house to some extent.
Goss is good. He's not that good.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true. Now, there's another thing. Nick, you brought this up, I think, about how Captain America needs to be the leader. And I think Captain America needs to have some, maybe, he has some ethical issue with Ultron being created. Let's just say if S.H.I.E.L.D.'s doing that. That's actually interesting that you bring that up, because there's a, I can't help but wonder if this is going to be, maybe this is going to be brought up in full, but there's a comic issue. It's a five-issue thing. Very quick. It's called Secret War. It's a one-shot, five-issue thing that happens right before Avengers Disassembled. And it's not brought up again until, like, later on. So it's completely on its own. And basically what it is all these heroes are just kind of going about their business in New York, just kind of having fun, Spider-Man, Daredevil, you know, Captain America, they're all whatever. But suddenly, shit hits the fan, they get attacked and assaulted by, like, a bunch of different enemies, and they have no idea who they are. And it turns out that these enemies are all enemies that they made when they did something that none of them remember doing. It was 5 years in the past, Nick Fury called a bunch of the Spider-Man, Daredevil, Wolverine, Captain America, and Luke Cage, I think it was mainly the five of them, and Black Widow, to throw the Latverian government. So Latveria is a country that Marvel set up, and it houses a really hostile government that is basically trying to create supervillains, and they're massive assholes. What else is new? And Nick Fury pulls a Cold War and goes behind the president's back and overthrows the government. And then he basically drugs them all, and he just makes them forget the whole 2 days that they were there. Captain America's the only one who's resistant to that drug, so he remembers. And so in that comic, there's a great scene where Luke Cage gets attacked and nearly dies. And Captain America, Nick Fury is, you know, at the hospital. Captain America shows up, and he just tackles Nick Fury and starts punching him, and he goes, "I warned you. I told you about the ethical problems of this." Yeah, so I would wonder if they're going to do something, if S.H.I.E.L.D. is behind Ultron, I wonder if Captain America would just punch Nick Fury in the face or something and do something like that, and saying, see, moral high ground is good.
Yeah, and I would totally like that. I as much as I understand his persona and his literally importance to the actual Marvel comics, I'm kind of done with Samuel L. Jackson. So, you know, I don't like Nick Fury as much as I like a lot of the other supporting S.H.I.E.L.D. members. So having that shift as well is something I would be, you know, if Fury somehow is, you know, tied in with Redford being the bad guy. Or instead, Redford's the new Fury, and Fury's actually pulling strings behind everyone's back as well, and as being the villain would be pretty interesting as well. But,
That could happen.
You know, because if they're really wanting to change it from the comics and everything, you know, why not make Samuel Jackson the bad guy? That, you know, you have that talent, why not make him evil? And I think, because, you know, the Redford thing, I think, is possible, but I don't want it to be that predictable. So, you know, having a change like that where it is, hey, Nick Fury, screw you, and then even Captain America takes over his shield or something. You know, having that kind of thing happen would be really interesting. But, yeah, in short, I don't want it to be the Tony Stark show. I want Cap to take charge already. And I understand he didn't in the first one because of how out of, you know, fish out of water kind of story he was. But with Winter Soldier and then whatever building up to Ultron, you know, this is his time to take over.
Okay. that's good. So Marvel's success rate, what I'm wondering is, does it have to do with their source material?
No.
No, not at all.
Compared to DC, Marvel stories are very relatively unknown by the general public. You know, most people know how Batman becomes Batman. Most people know Superman's an alien. No one really knows about Iron Man or Captain America or anything like that. I think that the genius behind it all is the casting. You know, even when the movies are bad, the casting is still pretty spot on. So, you know, the talent they've secured, both behind the scenes and in front of the camera, I think, is what's the most effective part of it all. Specifically, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, even though that horse is kind of getting beat a little too much.
I guess the reason I thought of that question is because in the DC podcast, we were talking about how much more difficult it seems to be to make good DC films that are not Batman. Marvel source material is starkly different from DC. DC really does their own thing and really goes far out. I mean, and when they're good, they're great. But Marvel keeps it a little tighter. And I have to wonder if that's a possible reason as to why we find their films a little bit better.
Yeah, I can understand that. You know, obviously my DC fanboyness is trying to defend itself, but I don't, maybe too, if it's just that with the DC characters, we're over familiar with them, so we have such higher expectations.
Yeah, well, being a Marvel fan for me at least, honestly, I think a lot of it had to do with luck with Marvel Universe, because, you know, their rights were everywhere. You know, Fox had them, Sony had them, and they really had the lesser known rights to these characters. I mean, we had a Captain America movie back in 1944, which nobody really knows about because it was that bad. And, you know, it wasn't really until Blade came out, and then that gave way for X-Men, which this wasn't Marvel, this is all their other companies.
Yeah, New Line Cinema did Blade.
Sure. Yeah. And then we had X-Men and then Spider-Man, and it kept building up, and Marvel kind of just was on the sidelines. And then finally, they decided that they wanted to make an Iron Man film, but a lot of it was also that they got lucky with the post-credit scene, because nobody really was expecting an Avengers film, I don't think. And then the film, Iron Man, came out, and with all this integration with S.H.I.E.L.D., everybody was like, oh my god, this is happening.
Yeah.
And then
Nick Fury shows up at the end of the film and saying, I'm like, talk to you about the Avengers movie.
Everybody kept going to see the Superman movies waiting for the end credits. They kept getting excited, and then we had Thor and Captain America, and finally it just came out to the Avengers, and I think, you know, that was the big eye-opening experience everybody was waiting for, and it delivered. And I think that Marvel got really, really lucky with the way that they prepped it, and it kind of was the right time. The right place at the right time.
And I think...
yeah, it was.
Excuse me. The craziness of the fans and everything is what really made their franchise. Because I don't know if they really thought they were going to go with it. And then once they
generated so much good film just by a freaking miracle.
Yeah. I was going to say, and then they realized after the reaction, was like, yeah, we're going to do this now. I don't think there was plans from the very beginning to do it.
Yeah. You know, I have another theory about this. You guys remember how, I mean, everybody remembers how Spider-Man 3 turned out, but I have to wonder, obviously everybody knows that Spider-Man 1 and 2 were fantastic, and the plans for Spider-Man 4 that Sam Raimi was really gunning for ultimately fell through. It didn't happen. Sam Raimi was disappointed with Spider-Man 3. He wanted to try and make amends and make a better movie for the 4th, and ended there, but that didn't work. I have to wonder if that was a blessing in disguise. Because with Spider-Man 4 falling through, suddenly Marvel has nothing big to stake its claim on.
I think it was that, and then, you know, before Spider-Man 3, there was this time where we had, after Spider-Man 2, between Spider-Man 3, we had Blade Trinity, Elektra, Fantastic Four, X-Men Last Stand, and Ghost Rider.
Oh yeah, Ghost Rider.
I mean, there is this huge chunk of terrible, awful superhero films.
Oh, Fantastic Four. I don't miss you at all.
Not at all, no.
So Rise of the Super Surfer is somehow worse than the first one. So, yeah, and the funny story, Silver Surfer is actually his origin. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy, their first original tie-in is with the Fantastic Four, then they get a tie-in with Iron Man in the comics, but Silver Surfer, which is one of the Fantastic Four, I think, one of their allies, he's one of the members of the Guardians of the Galaxy. He's not going to be in the movie, the one that comes out, but I wonder if he'll be in later, and I wonder if they'll bring in the F4 later on.
It is worth mentioning, too, that while Fox owns Fantastic Four, the rights to Silver Surfer are shared by Marvel and Fox.
Yeah.
So they could use him whenever they want. I know he's one of the few characters that Marvel didn't give up complete rights to. What I think Marvel should do, and I know we're probably going to get into the discussion real quick about the future of it, too, is that, you know, properties like Ghost Rider or something like that, they should give, like, lower budgets to, kind of like,
oh, yeah.
I don't know who else was, I can't remember who else was doing something like that, but lower budgets for their smaller characters, and then do whatever they want with it. So, like, Ghost Rider, give it to an up-and-coming director, make it R, you know, have fun with it, just continue to build on the universe, as opposed to, hey, let's just keep making money. If you give,
let's just keep any PG-13 family-friendly movies to pander to everybody.
Right, or even Fantastic Four, which is PG. But, like, if you give, like, $30 million, $50 million for Ghost Rider, make it R, make it fun, make it what fans want, they'll totally make that money back. You know, you don't need to make a $150 million movie. And, you know, right now, that's what my biggest concern is with Marvel, is I'm getting tired of a lot of the characters. So I think, you know, the next few years is when they really... Guardians of the Galaxy is a good step, but they really need to figure out how they can handle the secondary characters better instead of making them each a tentpole. You know, like Doctor Strange, he's rumored for Phase 3. I don't know if I want a $150 million movie of his. I want, you know, smaller films, character-driven films is the key part. And
they won't need... I don't think they'll need $150 million. But then again, that just because they don't need something doesn't mean they won't spend it anyway. So that's
right.
True.
That's what I'm worried about, is that, you know, we'll continue kind of with that bloated effect. And instead, you know, hey, I don't want it to be like a routine where it's like, okay, new year, two Marvel movies. New year, three Marvel movies or anything like that. I want it more kind of spaced out better and really focused on the characters.
I don't ever want more than two in 1 year. Yeah.
Right. And then, well... What Colin and I talked about that he wrote an article on too is that, you know, Disney pushing Ant-Man to like a month after Avengers Age of Ultron is just idiotic on every level.
That's so stupid. Yeah, just that's really, really bad.
And,
I mean,
and
unless you're even if you were going to try and make that story run parallel,
right,
time-wise, which wouldn't make any sense, but even if you were going to try and do that, that is just such a bad idea. You do not want to be releasing Ant-Man in the summer of 2015. Do it like a November release.
That's when it was originally set, too. And then they're like, oh, let's just add it to the summer where everything ever is coming
out. Yeah, I mean, so what I'm wondering, at what point do you think everyone else will get tired of them? And what does even if Marvel, because let's face it, even if Marvel's movies are good, if there's too much, too fast, everyone has a threshold where they're just like, I can't keep up with this anymore. I have a life. I have kids. Stuff like that.
I want you to tell me! No, better yet, stand up and tell the class! What do you wanna do with your life?
If they want to keep expanding the universe and everything like that, they obviously need to focus on more than just five characters. And, and I want diversity.
Black Panther.
Too. Yeah, Black Panther. I was just gonna say, I want diversity.
I've been waiting for a Black Panther movie for I don't know how long.
He needs to be in a movie. I agree. He needs to get it on. I love Luke Cage in too. I mean, I thought. By the way, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came out. I'm not going to spoil it for you. You know how we all thought that guy jumping out the window in the hood was going to be Luke Cage?
Yeah.
It's not. I'm just going to say that it's not.
Or it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
That's still disappointing.
They're saving Luke Cage for. They're saving Luke Cage for Dwayne Johnson. Duh.
I hope so, because Dwayne Johnson just fits it perfectly, but yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Either him or Terry Crews.
I was thinking about this for the past couple nights, was that, you know, because Scarlett Johansson just said that they're thinking, or they're planning a female-centric Marvel film, Phase 3. And, you know, that could be Miss Marvel, that could be a Black Widow movie, and I was wondering, you know, what do you guys think it is going to be?
Katie Sackhoff, Miss Marvel.
That's what I hope too, but I don't know.
I would like that. Scarlet Witch could get her own movie.
I have no interest in Black Widow. I don't want to see that at all.
Oh, me neither.
The only appeal is
like,
the fact
like
that it's Scarlet
supporting.
I think that would be. I don't think it would work.
I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing her again in Cap, but that's partially because she's a supporting character. It's like even Don Young. Scarlett Johansson's good in the movie, but she's good as a supporting character. I don't want to see her front and center.
Yeah,
like,
there's no need for that at all.
No, I was going to say that the only one that makes really sense is Marvel.
Well, unless they somehow elaborate Scarlet Witch's story or something. But
they can. There is a lot of material to do that for.
But that's going to be, especially with Fox owning the rights for Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, and they can't mention Magneto or mutants. I mean, I think to make a film centered on her is going to be, I think that'd be really difficult.
It would be. Other reason it would be difficult is because you'd have to, alongside Scarlet Witch, you wouldn't have a choice but to also star Quicksilver. If it's going to be a female-centric hero, if it's going to be Scarlet Witch, it wouldn't be female-centric. It would be these two people.
Yeah.
And I mean, Scarlet Witch is a lot of material for her. I mean, one thing I've always been wondering is Avengers 2, if it's going to be that, if it's going to have that darker edge to it, is it going to be, is it going to follow the story of Avengers Disassembled? Avengers Disassembled, just, you know, is a short. It's 33 issues or so. Comic. It's like the perfect place to start if you're going to start reading a comic. Like, that's the one to read. Because it's basically the Avengers as a team getting the crap beaten out of them. And they've had it coming. Like, in the comic, like, it is the worst day in history. It starts off with the Avengers Mansion just blowing up, and then She-Hulk goes crazy, they get attacked, it's all over the place. It's awesome. And not everybody survives.
And that would be really interesting if they do that. You know, as much as we've liked a lot of these characters, Iron Man especially, I think they don't need to complete clean slate, but they do need to really clean house. And
you need to take a back seat.
Yeah, and really the only way to do it too is to kill off characters, to make them, you know, done in that universe. Like, if they kill Iron Man, there's no chance of, you know, obviously Robert Downey Jr. will eventually stop playing the role. There's no chance of someone else taking over. And I'm assuming Marvel's not going to stop. They're just going to keep, you know, we'll have Phase 15 in 30 years. They're just going to keep building and building and building. And they're kind of in a trap with that, too, because they can't have the same characters over and over. But they have the luxury of time where they can build up everyone. And I think, you know, every 5-10 years, we'll have to have an event like that where it's like, okay, we loved you, Robert Downey Jr., you were a great Iron Man, it's your time to go. And the only way to get rid of him, technically, is to kill him. Because they couldn't recast him later on. Yeah. In the same universe, I should say.
And eventually it's going to get tiring.
Right. And that's the problem with Marvel, that Marvel Comics has too. Marvel Comics events get samey pretty fast. That's not to say that they're not good. Marvel has done some amazing things in their comics, but sometimes it gets really, really tedious. More tedious than DC. DC is so trippy in some ways that it's almost refreshing every time, just because the character's doing different things that are all equally weird but all different is refreshing enough by itself, and that's a different story. Marvel does run, it gains momentum, and then it just uses that momentum and it washes it away really fast.
I would say, I think if Marvel ever drops the ball, that's where we'll really have a big battle where DC has the momentum, possibly, to kind of make that power move. And I think I agree. If Marvel rushes things, and they're not careful, and they become tedious, and you know the fans become aware of that fact, they'll be looking for an alternate universe to fall in love with, and that would give room for DC to kind of make some noise. So I agree. Marvel needs to be very careful.
What are Marvel and DC if not two nerds competing over a girl? The girl
right.
is
all. Exactly.
That's true.
And you know. There's only so many tricks and maneuvers you can use until the girl realizes, hey, the other one's more appealing.
And let's face it, we're a very indecisive girl. Right now, we've got our eyes set, and we're all wet and heavy for Marvel right now. But if Marvel exhausts itself, and if Marvel just pushes too much, it'll be too much even for us. So we'll just look to DC to give us something better. It's a flawed metaphor, but it's kind of hilarious.
But I think we started to see a bit of Marvel speeding it up to the point where it's getting tedious with Ant-Man. And I don't have any doubt that it's going to be great. I love Edgar Wright, but I think the fact that it's 2 months after Avengers Age of Ultron is the point that, I mean, it's the point where I'm even getting sick of it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think this is where it's starting.
Well, and yeah. The thing you got to think, too, is that it's not Marvel that's made that decision. That's Disney. So Disney is putting Ant-Man like a month after Ultron and like 2 months after Star Wars Episode 7. I mean, if you're not shooting yourself in the foot.
And Batman versus Superman.
Well, I'm just saying these are three huge-ass movies from the same studio. You know,
sure.
It's like, are they really trying to clutter themselves to death?
Because they're blowing their load.
These movies are going to... That summer... is going to be all about opening weekends. No movie is going to have any legs at the box office. Because like you said, V, we're all going to be wasting hundreds and hundreds of dollars that summer. Like, I'm already saving up for it. You know, it's just so much shit.
Yeah.
And it's just like, why crowd something like that? Age of Ultron, the month after Like, seriously, you're going to have Avengers be at the top for 3 weeks, and then it's just going to be like, oh, here's Ant-Man. You know, it's cursing one or the other, and obviously Ant-Man's going to be the casualty.
Actually, I have to wonder, what is it going to be? Is Avengers coming out in May, or is it going to come out in June? Because I thought that
May.
Episode 7 was going to come out in the beginning of May, because it's May the 4th be with you, you know, the Star Wars Day. So I would have thought that was what they were going to do. But then again, I don't...
Star Wars is July.
So Avengers Age of Ultron is May 1st.
Ant-Man is July 31st.
Wow.
Episode 7 is...
I mean,
I don't know if there's an official release date yet.
I'm not sure either. It can't possibly be. It'll probably be right in the middle.
Yeah, it can't be a fall. It's a summer movie.
Oh, yeah.
But even with those, I'm so sick of Disney because with after Episode 7 and then Avengers Age of Ultron, the next year, we're probably going to be getting standalone Marvel films and standalone Star Wars films, and they're going to be suffocating everything, and I'm so sick of it. I mean, they haven't even been releasing them, kind of already done, because I don't even, first of all, I don't want to see a standalone Star Wars film. I don't care who it is that's going to be the main focus.
We don't need more movies.
Yeah, but they're talking about a Yoda film, a Han Solo film, and they're talking about, I mean, I don't want to see
any. One every year? Jesus, how, I mean, even James Bond is not that tenacious.
Well,
yeah,
I know.
Think about it, too. One every year of Star Wars, two every year of Marvel, you know, Disney, good for you for making all this money, but you're gonna choke your own audience to death.
No, Nick, fuck Disney for making all that money. Speaking of which, I hate to go on another tangent here, but I want to see your guys' opinion about, because you've got all these television writers and television directors who are making these big blockbusters, like you had J.J. Abrams, who did Star Trek, then you had Joss Whedon, did Avengers, now you have guys coming from Game of Thrones and Community. I mean, the guys who did, some of the writers on Community are doing Captain America and Game of Thrones for Thor.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that we're seeing, like, kind of a television renaissance with filmmaking?
I do.
I'm just waiting for Vince Gilligan to do a superhero movie.
Well, let's save this conversation for the Breaking Bad podcast.
Blue Beetle for DC.
So let's save that one for later, because that's actually a topic we could probably kill some time on.
To answer your question short, I do agree that, especially with how far TV has come in the last 10 years, critically, commercially, story-wise, everything like that, it's really, and like how many stars are going to the small screen, I think it's a big sign that, you know, the powers aren't really shifting as much as they're combining. Like before, you were a TV star. It was like, okay, good for you. Now you have to break out into movies. Now it's movie stars coming to TV and, you know, vice versa and everything. So I think it's really interchangeable. And I think it's smart on a lot of people's aspects, too, of, you know,
I think that
because...
started with
20. Yeah, and with TV shows, though, too, directing those are a lot harder than directing movies because you're on a lot tighter schedule. You know, you have less time with your people. Depending on how many episodes, depending on how many episodes you direct. So, you know, tapping into that is a great idea. While giving them millions of dollars right off the bat, though, I'm not quite sure about. But yeah, it's exciting just to have the two comparisons and the two worlds coming together. I should say more than anything.
So anyway, I guess this probably to the last segment of the podcast. I have like a sort of a special announcement. I haven't told too many people about this, and it turns Marvel, that's why I was giving it this. For those of you who don't know my blog, and probably nobody would know my blog, because it's not very well known. It's called V for Verbatim, it's a WordPress. I don't publish too many things on that as much as I used to, because the movie reviews that I write go straight to Cinecats. I like to write other stuff. I write politics sometimes. I write just random things, reflections on episodes of TV or things like that. And one thing I decided to do was, when it comes to comic franchises and book adaptations, there's almost nothing better publicity-wise for a book than to have a good movie or a good TV show be made out of it. If the Harry Potter books weren't popular enough as they were already, once the movies started coming out, everybody had to read those books. Game of Thrones, I mean, those books are huge, so not everyone is reading them, but the sales, it basically bumped them up back up to the New York Times bestseller list once the show came. So with that in mind, the Marvel Cinematic Universe has grossed approximately $5 billion cumulatively, but how many more people are running to the comic store to pick up some stuff? How many people are actually looking into that? Not too many. And I started thinking about why. And now, my friend Movie Bob has a couple episodes of his Big Picture answering that question, and he thinks most people probably are just afraid of the continuity. Now, continuity itself is not a problem, but it is big. The problem with comic franchises is that they're huge, you don't know where to start, and given the way we have gotten into the habit of watching TV shows, we marathon TV shows nowadays. We like to start either at the beginning of the whole show or the beginning of a season and then just go. But with comics, it seems impossible to do that. So what I decided to do is maybe I should help people out and make some kind of reading list, summarizing some reading material of Marvel stuff that I would recommend people to check out if you want to try and get a little ahead of the game and learn a little bit more about the characters and speculate on possible other stories that we might get movies out of. Yeah, that's what I've been working on. And what do you guys think about that?
I don't know. I think you may have mentioned it in passing when we've talked before. But yeah, it's like a kind of like a starter kit kind of thing. That's a great idea. And for me especially, as much as I am a comic book fan, you know, DC and Marvel to an extent, one of my biggest issues is like where to start. You don't just jump into this ocean of comics. So yeah, I think it's a great idea. It's going to be helpful for not only fans that, you know, may appear to be bigger fans than they really are. I can include myself on that to some extent, but also for, you know, curious people that are wanting to get into the game but don't know where to go. So yeah, great idea, and I'll use it. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I think it's a great idea. I've actually been meaning to catch up on some comics and try to get into that same crowd. I'm not an avid comic reader, but I've read some on hand. But yeah, I think it's a great idea, and it's a very hard kind of medium to figure out where to start.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll definitely be looking into it too.
Yeah, one thing I do is I made a flowchart.
are you like some obsessed cop with like strings and pictures on a bulletin board in your living room or whatever? Or it's just like obsessed over every little detail.
When you look at the flowchart that I made, and I used Microsoft Visio because I learned how to use that last year. If you look at the flowchart I made, you probably would think that I have a physical version of it on my wall. I don't. I did it all on the computer. But I would just make smaller reading lists inside the respective folders. I've organized my comic library fairly well, even though my comic library is just like, it's just folders within folders. and then the material. But yeah, so that's, and it's all online too. But yeah. So yeah, that's what that's all about, and I thought that would be a good way to end the podcast.
I will also say that I will definitely even carve out a little spot for you on the site where it's like V's starter guide to superheroes or whatever, and link to all your stuff. So yeah, I'll definitely. It sounds like you're working your ass off on it. So I will personally try my hardest.
It won't look like a lot. I don't plan on writing like too much because I don't want people to just end up reading just a giant volume of stuff themselves. I want to give people just a general list and say, here's what to do and here's the general order. But so it's not going to be that big, but it's, you know, it's kind of, you know how some people say, you know that saying, I didn't have time to write a short essay, so here's a ridiculously long one. I'm taking the time to make it short.
Okay.
So yeah, hopefully it'll be manageable in that way. I don't know when it's going to be finished, but yeah, I'll keep you guys posted.
Regardless, it sounds like you're really working on it, so I will definitely, you know, try to give it as much love as I can and use it as much as I can as well. So definitely a good way to close it out. And you'll get to DC eventually. Or you might inspire me to do DC.
So yeah, there you go.
Thank you, V, very much for hosting your very first episode of KTZR. Cats and Jammer Radio, the official podcast of the Cinematic Cats and Jammer. You can find all three of us and plenty of others, as well as movie trailers, reviews, news, lists, opinions, and everything else good about movies and comics at the Cinematic Cats and Jammer at www.cinecats.com. That is cats with a K. We still don't have a tagline for this site yet, but we'll have one. So, hey, if you have any suggestions to our audience for a good tagline for the site, we'll have an official, unofficial contest. In short, it means if it's good enough, I might steal it and give you proper, improper credit, or I might just not use anything you have at all. But anyway, for me, Nick, V, and Colin, thank you all for listening to another episode of KTZR. And I will officially, unofficially announce that our next episode we might be taking a step away from the big screen and have us three again return for a discussion about the greatest show ever made, Breaking Bad. Which ends this Sunday or last Sunday, depending on when this episode gets posted. But again, thanks for listening. Have a good day. Until next time.
Good night, guys.
The Cinematic Cats Jammer can be found at www.cinecats.com. We are a movie site made of movie lovers that bring you the latest in movie news, reviews, trailers, and more. Thank you to all of our readers and listeners, and if you find our content interesting, please feel free to share it with your friends. We would also like to thank Vern of the Vern's Video Vanguard for editing the show, and a big thanks to Dylan Soma for providing the theme music. KTZR is a proud member of the LAN Podcasting Network.